And it kind of got me thinking, well, if I keep saying, don't do curfews, why don't you do something else that helps people? Something real, something that treats them like human beings. Well, what will we get, orphanages? So it's a frustrating dilemma in my mind.
Yeah, well, of course, the comments of people I've talked to in the area about the curfew, the first thing they say is, well, where are you going to put them, you know? And that's, of course, the question which I've read in other newspaper articles.
That seems easy to me, though. I mean, there's not a community consciousness that they should be anywhere. I mean, unless they're spending money on makeup or rock and roll making noise machines, there's not a place for young people in our society, period, you know? But there's all kinds of vacant buildings, you know? Like half the gallery is empty. Every block on the Pacific Avenue has a vacant building right now, you know? Where I grew up, which was in a county seat near Washington, D.C., all the condemned buildings, well, not all of them, but several condemned buildings have been turned over, ostensibly temporarily, to young people who turned them into beautiful places to be. This was in the 60s. By contrast, in our city, every time somebody, no matter what the color they are, no matter how much money they have, opens a place where youth are welcomed, they become the object of a lot of harassment and persecution until they have to close down.
Can you give us some examples?
Well, I just read that Arnaldo Gil Osorio's proposal for a place that young people could dance over there, where it wouldn't interfere with any other commerce going on around it in the old depot.
Mm-hmm.
The planning or zoning board turned down his request to let them be there at night.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, our old friend Abdullah, what about Judith's?
Abdullah, tell the audience what that's all about.
Well, people in Santa Cruz probably know about this, but once along Front Street, between the river and Front Street, there was a place that had several different things going on, big locations. It's since been raised, it's parking spaces now. But it wasn't exclusively for young people, but young people were welcome.
And what was the name of this club?
I don't know.
They had a club culture, perhaps?
Club culture, yeah.
And
anyway,
of course, there was the Cafe Chameleon.
Yeah, that's another good example.
And there was Anapus Warpus, which, I guess, not Anapus Warpus, but the cafe that Anapus Warpus replaced.
They closed down the whole block there and created greater racial tensions, which I believe led to the shooting not too long ago, because young people are pushed out. That's the only politic going on in our city. If something starts to form up where there is culture or a kind of clan or tribalism among young people, then some sort of brute force comes in and displaces them, and usually it's the city with the police as their forces.
Have you heard anything about the Beach Flats meetings recently with City Council? I think Eric Larson's gotten some publicity in the papers around this.
Well, I've talked to Eric, and I've talked to some of my former neighbors in that neighborhood who were organizing it, but I didn't get to go to this culminating meeting on the 31st.
We should probably try to make this kind of as accessible and intelligible to the audience here. Linda and I often talk on the phone, but this is a... Do you have any reports? I believe you were talking to me earlier about some sort of... you were asking people to write in to one of the local groups so that this is the last day for them to receive any kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Is that appropriate for you to...
You know, I hadn't thought of that as a way to perhaps direct some resources to young people, mm-hmm. young adults and teenagers.
So we're talking about the Community Action Board here?
Yeah. Well, in the next 25 minutes,
mm-hmm.
Perhaps you could even call in, I don't know, but you can try. The Community Action Board has an annual process where they want to hear from the public as part of their planning for future funding, spending. And they're also going through a lot of changes, as is everyone who gets federal or state money right now. So it's a real good time to call in and let the Community Action Board know about your needs. And their phone number is 457-1741.
457-1741.
Yeah, but you're going to have to call by noon.
And what are you supposed to tell these people?
Well, people need to think for themselves. I know that's a challenge for some of us, but if you recognize there are unmet needs in the community, and I think pretty much everyone knows that young people are neglected in our community. You need to mention that. The public hearing process is for finding out what the needs are that CAB, who spends money to overcome poverty issues, could deal with.
CAB is the Community Action Board.
Yeah.
Anything else to tell our audience?
Well, I just don't support curfews, and I don't support a society that tries to eat its own children. It's I can't think of anything more stupid and self-defeating.
All right, well, thank you, Linda. And I encourage people to call the Community Action Board if they have any proposals that they, concerns or needs they think the Community Action Board should be trying to meet in its next year. How much funding do they have to spend, anyway?
Well, it varies a lot, and right now it's up to Congress, but they're... You know, they have programs.
Hundreds of thousands, millions, $10,000?
Maybe $100,000.
$100,000. So do you think of any programs you think CAB could properly put forward? And this, I think, is today is the deadline. Give a call to, what's that number again, Linda?
457-1741.
457-1741.
And mention the public hearings to make sure that the information gets there.
And mention this is information that you're giving them around the public hearings on CAB's next fiscal year, I guess. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Bye. Bye-bye.
So that was Lighthouse Linda, who's quite frankly a crony of mine and an activist. Can you hear me? I want to make sure I'm up here. That was Lighthouse Linda. And she's encouraging people to call in the Community Action Board at 457-1741. And today apparently is the last day you can do that. So, I'm going to try to run through some announcements now and throw in an occasional piece of poetry, maybe zip in a little reading before I get hauled out of here. The vehicular camping law, I think you may have mentioned it earlier in the program, the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, of course, makes it illegal for everybody and anybody to sleep in any vehicle in town, including one parked in your garage, which, of course, is pretty darn silly. But even more silly is the fact that we have here a shelter crisis and shelter emergency, and it is illegal for churches to invite people to park on church property in their vehicles, even with the permission of the church, even if they have adequate restroom facilities. So the city council, in its snail-like pace, is moving incrementally to consider changing this law. And they've been talking about it since, I just read an article from a January Good Times, in which Catherine Byers made a statement on that. So some of us feel the thing to do is to step up some of the pressure on the council to try to get off the dime on this issue. And I'm going to encourage people to call the City Council at 429-3550. That's the City Council hotline number. If you call them now, you'll be able to talk to somebody on the live line, but you can call them any time during the weekend, 429-3550, and you'll get a recording machine. You can just record your name, your number, and say, hey, I would like to see churches able to have people park on church property with the permission of the church, and only actually considering three vehicles on each particular parking lot. So you can suggest even a broader proposal if you'd like. But it should be legal for people to church, for people who are invited by a church to park on that property and sleep overnight if they're not causing a health or safety problem. And that seems obvious to me, and hopefully it will seem obvious to the City Council if you give them a call at 429-3550, and you can indeed call them now. And what will happen if you call now is they'll give you, they'll ask you who you want to talk to, and you can say any city council member or the city council, and you can leave a message for them with the secretary there, which asks them to get off the dime, pass this thing fast. And if you really want to get radical, or let's say sensible, ask them also to reform the sleeping ban, the law that makes it illegal to sleep outside and illegal to sleep in a vehicle. Because right now the county law is more liberal than the city law. In the county, if you're driving through the county and you get tired, you can pull over and sleep. It's called the roadside resting law. If it happens to you here in the city, no way. You're caught sleeping for any reason in your vehicle after 11 o'clock at night, you're subject to a ticket. You do it twice within 48 hours, that's a misdemeanor. Theoretically punishable by up to 6 months in jail. Now I was going to do a follow-up on Mike Rutkin. Vis-a-vis his sleeping ban stuff, Mike Rutkin is a council member who is he and I have had a kind of a long-term debate in the public press, either in City on a Hill and occasionally in other publications. Most recently, we exchanged views at the cable TV station. He was on TV and I called him. This was on Tuesday. Mike is very self-assured, jovial, amiable, friendly, well-spoken guy who is also a revolving door, what I call a revolving door city council person. He just goes right in and gets elected and then comes back 5 years later and gets re-elected. He's part of the coterie, the SCANS, Santa Cruz Action Network coterie that gets re-elected to the same offices. He's a professor at the University of, an instructor at the University of California at Santa Cruz. And he also calls himself a socialist. I call him a sofa bed socialist because socialism doesn't extend too far beyond the sofa bed and doesn't extend anywhere as far as poor people in Santa Cruz go who are stuck out on the streets facing the police force that he has empowered to arrest them for sleeping in vehicles. The problem I have with Mike is, of course, his position on these issues. He supported the city sleeping ban for a decade. But more important, his misrepresentation of me and others on how we stand on the issues. We're trying to educate the public, and Mike is doing all he can to miseducate the public on this issue. And, of course, it's a self-defensive effort. He wants to, self-protective, he wants to make sure that his liberal ass does not get slapped by that part of his constituency which might turn in, and some of them have. And so what are you talking about, Mike? How can you support a law that makes it illegal for people to sleep at night? Or more recently, how can you support a law that makes it illegal for a person to peacefully ask for a dime while sitting on a bench, as Mike has? And if you do it twice, you get to go to jail for up to 6 months, according to the letter of the Rapkin Downtown Ordinance Law. How can you do that, Mike? And Mike's response, at least his response to the first question about the sleeping ban, no, actually, it was a series of questions. He was asked, how could you support a law that makes it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk? That was the famous law last year where police rioted and beat up about a dozen people and made one pregnant woman miscarry, and another guy got a broken rib, and of course, Steve Belcher has nothing negative to say about these police, nor did Mayor Kennedy or Mayor Byers, or new mayor, Mayor Byers, but nor did Mike, that I remember, Mike Rapkin. And Rapkin was asked about the sitting on the sidewalk law. You know, how can you justify arresting people for sitting on the sidewalk? And he then, in a breathtaking performance in the course of about three sentences, went through five or six lies, which I was just racing to keep up with my pencil and paper, and then called the studio to correct him on. I corrected him somewhat, although I was rushed to do so, because it was a time problem. And Mike is much more, well, certainly somewhat more glib and facile than I am. I regard myself as a sort of a glib guy, but I got lessons to learn from him. He was able, in the course of my answer, the next three sentences, he repeated two of the same lies again and went off on three more. So, I mean, it's really difficult. But the kind of misrepresentations that Mike makes are things like this. He'll talk about people blocking the sidewalk, sleeping all over your houses, we'll make small changes to make it a little easier to arrest them. These are people who aren't genuinely homeless, they're just protesters. Actually, these are two things that were said more by Kennedy than by Rapkin. But the issue about people blocking the sidewalk, we don't need a law for people if they're blocking the sidewalk. There are already laws for that. Making penalties a little heavier, this makes it jail time. That's considerably heavier. People sleeping anywhere and everywhere they want, that's never been the issue, although Mike always frames it that way. And it's interesting, no matter how many times I correct him, he just loves to keep repeating the same lie, which is that we are somehow seeking the right of anybody and everybody to sleep on your front lawn, and in front of your business, right downtown, that sort of thing. No, the reason demonstrators do sleep downtown when they have, the reason I did on November 1st last year and was recently found guilty of it and charged $40, was because it's illegal for people to sleep anywhere in Santa Cruz outside, except for the open-air campground, which was opened only after years of protest by us, and which still only provides spaces for about 100, 125 people at most, and that makes the hundreds and hundreds of other people illegal. It's not like saying, oh, we want more spaces. I'm saying, why are you going to be so cruel and stupid as to arrest people for sleeping if they have no legal place to be? And that's not the same thing as saying, you know, gimme, gimme, gimme. It's just talking common sense and basic humanity. At least that's what I'm trying to do here. So that's just a word about Mike Rotkin. It would be much more clearly put if I could just show you some video clips of, or some audio clips. Maybe I'll do that on my next show. Try to get an audio clip of what Mike had to say, and then we can kind of parse his sentences and examine very closely the kinds of quick lies he's able to compact into a couple of sentences. It is quite impressive, quite impressive. And I've come to the conclusion it's completely cynical and completely second nature with Mike. It's not really a big issue with him, but he just covers his ass in a kind of a natural way, that he's been doing that for years and will continue to do that. Around that issue, I have a letter I wrote. This is it's out of date, so I'm not going to go into it at this time. I don't want to get too keyed up into these issues. Interesting thing I got from Los Angeles a couple years ago, the Los Angeles Coalition to End Homelessness, is the Principles on Panhandling, which was issued. There's a lot of brouhaha about panhandling, and here's what the Los Angeles Coalition to End Homelessness had to say about the big brouhaha about panhandlers and new laws and new little certificates to stop people for asking for change and so forth. Many people do not like panhandling. While we acknowledge that panhandling makes people fear for their safety and businesses fear for their sales, the reality is that the Say No to Panhandlers campaigns by local communities serves only to push the homeless and other poor people from one community to the next and does nothing to address the underlying reasons of why people are homeless. The following are a set of principles that we hope will guide communities in their debate on the issue. 1. We cannot support the big lie as it manifests itself in the Say No to Panhandling campaigns. A. Referral cards to give to the homeless. You'll see these in Santa Cruz sometimes. They give you a little card that says, go to the shelter or something. They want you, instead of giving a dime, you're supposed to give them a little card. No. Homeless people generally know where the services are. The issue is not their location, but money for phone calls and transportation, and the larger issue that the services are overwhelmed. There are 70,000 people who are homeless in Los Angeles County and less than 9,000 shelter beds and only 34 drug treatment beds. Now, I don't have all the stats in Santa Cruz County, but I know that there are under 250 shelter beds in Santa Cruz County and over 700 homeless people. I mean, in the city, I don't mean the county. The county has thousands. And over 700 in the city limits. What about, and asks this plier, the Say No to Panhandling campaign, say, rather than give your money to panhandlers, give to agencies? No. The end result of this transaction is that it dehumanizes the interaction between people to hand someone who is hungry a card, a piece of cardboard. In addition, social service agencies report seeing no increases in donations when they give out these little cards. And finally, it takes away your choice. Businesses don't believe that you can make your own decision whether to help or not to help someone. Follow your heart. Give if you can. If you don't want to give money, give a friendly response. Or as I do occasionally, offer to buy them some food. That's what I do. The sole beneficiaries of these campaigns, say give money to panhandlers, don't give it to panhandlers, give it to businesses, are the businesses who charitably push homeless people from one community to the next. Even this is short-sighted, however, since the real reason that businesses are hurting is due to a failing economy and not aggressive panhandling, or maybe the large chains are involved in giving the smaller shops problems, too. We support people's legal right to ask for money and a person's right to refuse to give if they so choose. We do not, nor should we, differentiate between a homeless person asking for change from a Girl Scout asking for change. 3. No one has the right to engage in threatening, abusive, or violent behavior. Such behavior is already illegal under existing law and was illegal before Kennedy, Rotkin, Yokoyama, Matthews, all of them, put through the new anti-panhandling law, which makes it illegal to peacefully ask for money in Santa Cruz after dark or from a seated position or in a group of two or from a car or near a store. You name it. This is endless web of laws they put in. 4, educate yourself about the realities of homelessness. For example, homeless people are most often the victims of crime and not the perpetrators. And the majority of homeless people do not abuse alcohol or drugs. 5, we believe that all people should be treated with dignity and respect and not out of anger or the fears perpetuated by prejudice and stereotypes. For example, do you react differently by a bell-ringing Santa Claus or to a professional solicitor for a charity than to a person who is homeless asking for change? I know I do. I'm also affected by these stereotypes. 6, we encourage people to re-examine their own cultural and religious traditions that see giving alms to the poor as part of their moral duty. Many religious figures, including Buddha and Francis of Assisi, supported themselves by asking for alms. Giving to the poor is a particularly strong tradition in the Jewish faith, and the giving of alms is the 3rd of the 7 pillars of Islam. Darki Shayim, Rabbi Shayim of Sons, said, "The merit of charity is so great that I am happy to give to beggars even if only one might actually be needy. Some people, however, act as if they are exempt from giving charity to 100 beggars in the event that one might be a fraud." Von Unzer Altar Otzart II, Rabbi Schmelke of Nicholsburg, said, "When a poor man asks you for aid, do not use his faults as an excuse for not helping him. For then God will look for your offenses, and he is sure to find many of them. Keep in mind that the poor man's transgressions have been atoned for by his poverty, while yours still remain with you." Says Martin Luther King, and where do we go from here? "The agony of the poor impoverishes the rich. The betterment of the poor enriches the rich. We are inevitably our brother's keeper because we are our brother's brother. Whatever affects one affects the other." And there's more, and that's all from the Los Angeles Coalition to End Homelessness. In case you've got a long-distance phone, you want to call them up, and the number is still working. This is 3 years old. It's 213-746-6511. And that's another view on panhandling, and one that more closely approximates my own. So, we're getting near the end of the hour here, and I'm not sure if we have a long show today or a short show. Well, actually, we may have a possibility of a longer show. Maybe it'll be another person coming in till 1 when Bottom Line Bob LaMonica comes in with the Recall Art Danner Show. As you may know, the Coalition to Recall Danner is continuing its struggle to get petitions signed that would allow the voters to vote Prosecutor D.A. Art Danner back into private life. That would be nice. Danner has been around here for nearly 2 decades, and I can tell you he hasn't gotten any better. Danner deserves a recall in my book for his harassment of homeless activists, for his, in spite of some of his politically fashionable statements on drug crime, he hasn't pursued charges against a medical marijuana person recently, and that's good, but generally the vast overemphasis on drug crime in his courts. I'd like to see him out, and I hope you listen to the show that Bottom Line Bob will be bringing you this afternoon starting at 1 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. And the call-in number here, if you're interested, is 427-3772. We do have a talk line. This isn't just my private number. You actually can get on the air. You actually can speak to the public, speak to me, speak to the world. So speak. Give us a call at 427-3772. If anything we said is of interest to you, if you feel like you have something you want to contribute, if you have a question, if you need me to repeat a phone number, hey, I'd be happy to do that. And right now, I'll run by another poem by you from Julia Vinograd, Street Tenses, her book, Street Tenses. Here's a poem called Freedom. "Last time it was enough to go up to a stranger, intoxicated with the crowd's shared danger, trust, and say hello. Kiss the person on your right, whoever, and then the person on your left, whoever. But we were children then. That was easy. That was nothing. This time we must go up to the people who know us better and say hello until we both believe it. Then we can do anything. Street people and students. A student sees a street going through forms, pretending to be crazy, making up impressive jail stories, living off government money, with no homework, no pressure, cheating everyone, and with all that money and all that free time and such bizarre costumes. Why, he can get more girls than I can. It's an outrage. A street dude sees a student going through ritual classes, pretending to study, making up impressive football stories, living off family money, with no hassle, no need to hustle, cheating everyone, and with all that money and all that free time and such fashionable clothes, why, he can get more girls than I can. It's an outrage. So the students call street people bums, and the street people call students robots, and the girls walk by full of promises, saying nothing and proving everything. Street people and students. Wow. Good poetry from Julia Vinaigrette of Berkeley. Street Night. Here's another poem. A harmonica holds up the moon like a drunk holding up a lamppost. A cop makes him stop jamming, and the moon falls down. The bottle breaks, the cop leaves, a fight starts, and the moon comes back to watch. A lot of poems by Julia, and next time I'll be reading you some more poems. And we still have Backyard Brian Staley here in the studio with us. He's keeping his ear to the ground, watching for the phone to ring, and we keep hoping one of you will get up enough courage or perhaps enough interest to give us a call here at 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3. Yeah, this is the time I usually read a bit from Sidney Lanz. Sidney Lanz is an author, written many books about different forms and different periods in radical history. This book is called Radicalism in America, and it's about American history, early American history, the colonial period and after. And I'm just kind of working my way through it because I think it's so interesting a book and covers a period so little covered in the past. And we've reached chapter 3, the Revolution. I'm going to read you a little bit about that. During the colonial period, Americans considered themselves good Englishmen pledged to crown and country. Even as John Cood led a few hundred men to topple the government of Maryland, he conceded the right of King William and Queen Mary to the province of Maryland and all the English dominions. The quarrel of most rebels was with the native elite, the native landowner, the native sheriff and magistrate. And by native, we don't mean American Indian. We mean the governors who came over from England but who were here in the U.S. Aha! Phones are ringing. We'll interrupt our reading.
Yes, you're on the Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I heard you talking about the Citizens of Lower Ocean meeting.
Oh, yeah.
I attended that.
Oh, great. What's your name, sir?
My name's Bob.
Bob, okay, yeah. Bob.
Skidmark Bob, actually.
You're Skidmark Bob, actually. I don't think I can fool the audience.
Your show at work. Sounds great.
Great, thank you. So this is a meeting, as I understand, organized by people like Eric Larson and different community members?
Actually, yes. It was a meeting put on by, I believe, it's supposed to be the Lower Ocean Neighborhood Meeting, but it was run by the city. The whole city council was there. They sat up on stage. Of course, none of them live in the Lower Ocean area.
This is a meeting about the problems of the Lower Ocean area?
Yes, it is.
And this happened a couple days ago?
This happened Wednesday.
And this was city council members attending to get input from the community, right?
That, as well as the police department and Public Works and different other groups that were there from the city.
I see.
And what they did was basically they went through what they were going to do, putting in street lights, which is some of the things they should have done a long time ago. They want to reroute traffic. Of course, they're talking about the drug problem that's there, but I had informed them that it's their government that brings in the drugs. and that anybody that's brown skin is going to be criminalized, and they also want to start an anti-loitering law.
An anti-loitering law. That's what Berkeley has put into effect.
Yes.
And what council members were listening to this?
All of them. All seven of them were there.
Really?
They're up on stage behind this big desk, and none of them live down in Lower Ocean, so I don't even understand why they have anything to do with it. And it's just the people need to start taking it back. They can't rely on the city anymore to do things for them. They have to do that themselves. But Steve Belcher, chief police, was there. Art Danner was there himself, too. He was kind of hiding in the corner.
The DA?
Yes. And various other people were there that were trying to, at least 100, 150 people showed up for this. It was at the Unity Temple. So there's people that are concerned about it, although they're going about it the wrong way, relying on the city to do it for them. They want to pass anti-loitering law. They would like to reroute the traffic down Barson Street. So it's like a drug loop happening there. But they don't understand that the people that are selling drugs are just trying to survive. I myself don't do those drugs or sell those types of drugs. I think they're stupid drugs, but in this society, the way it is today, people are surviving. And the things like 187 and the crime bill and Newt Gingrich's stuff happening, Contract on America, people are going to have to resort to selling drugs to survive.
Did you, did you sense that there was sort of a few people who were leading the community and expressing to city council what they felt the community needed, or was there a wide outpouring of different views, or what did the community tell the council that they needed that you haven't already mentioned?
Well, the community itself, most of the city officials were up there doing the talking of what they came up with. Like, the public works would go out and realize, oh, there's potholes here, or they need to repave this. They need to fix the flooding problem on Barson and Ocean there. And then they presented what they felt they needed, and then different other groups went up there. Well, just some of the neighborhoods of Lower Ocean said that they want this and they want that. And then they had a time where it can only take 10 people to go up and express their own opinions on the whole thing.
Hmm.
But there was mainly overwhelming response to more police presence in the area. They will be adding two more police officers. They said they're going to take at least a few months to do that, but yesterday I was walking down there and they already have a cop on the walk beat on Barson Avenue, Barson and Ocean area.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've seen more police presence than ever since that meeting, actually.
What's your reaction to that increased police presence?
It intimidates me, personally. I went up and told them that it intimidated me. I've had my girlfriend gets looked at and kind of harassed, thinking that she's a prostitute just for walking there, and I live in that area.
Harassed by police officers?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Constantly.
And when did that last happen?
And they know we're activists, so, they like to fuck with us. Oh, did I say that on air? Oh.
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. When was the last time that this woman was harassed by police officers?
Not too long ago, about a week ago or so.
And what form did this harassment take?
Just the way they look at us, the way they treat us, they kind of question us, what are you doing here? It's like, either we're buying or we're selling, And I'm just walking to go to my house, and people don't seem to understand that, especially police officers.
Well, I think that for organizers, there's a fertile area, both in the beach flats and, along Laurel Street. I was driving to a Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting, actually, the other day, when I saw a police squad car and a patrol, a motorcycle, stopping two Latino men by the side of the road and towing their car.
Mm-hmm.
And I got out with my tape recorder and sat down to tape record what was going on and witnessed the situation, which I frequently do sort of impromptu. And I recommend it to our listeners. It's quite legal to listen to and observe and record a police stop.
Oh, definitely.
Provided you aren't interfering, provided you're not interrupting or breaking in or standing in the way. And you don't have to stand 40 feet away. You can stand like 10 feet away. It's quite, it gives them quite enough room. And it's also important often to get other people to stand there and watch police incidents as they happen.
Well, I'm going to have to get back to work, so I just want to let people know that I'm going to play excerpts from that meeting on Wednesday on my show, which is on Sunday nights.
Okay, and you know about the announcement by Mumia, right?
Yes, I did.
All right, then. So, thank you.
I'm going to break loose in Philly.
I bet that. All right, well, listen, thank you. When is your show again?
Sunday. Starts at about 9-ish to the wee morning hours.
Wow. Goes on forever, eh?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, maybe people will call in and give you instances of police misconduct that you can then pass on.
Great.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was Skidmark's Bob. I admit I knew him from before, and I continue to know him. He actually formed a group called Cop Watch last summer and was engaged in monitoring police behavior. Now, I got to say that although I do that as well, and though when I did this incident when I was involved in this situation a few days ago, watching these two Latino men getting a ticket, and it was a ticket and their car was being towed, and you might say, well, that seems to be a standard kind of thing. I'd like to point out that laws that, for example, state the new law that state that your car is vulnerable to a month's impound on the first seizure and permanent sale on the second if you have a suspended license are aimed directly at the heart of poor people. I mean, it doesn't say suspended for drinking alcohol. It says suspended. So if you can't pay fines for this reason or that, and your license gets suspended, they're going to haul away your car if they catch you driving without it. And it's utterly abusive and pointless, because how are you going to get to work without a vehicle in many cases? You're going to be forced to drive illegally anyway. Another call coming in.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, how are you doing?
Not bad. How are you?
I'm doing good. I hope that there's not too much radio feedback.
No, I can hear you. Go ahead.
I was also at the city council meeting.
Oh, good. What's your name?
Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. Last talk show.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah,
glad to hear you again. So tell us about this. Is at the council meeting down in the beach flats, where we were discussing issues of public safety and issues about fixing the streets and then putting out extra officers on the beat and this new, what I regard as ominous anti-loitering law.
Exactly. First of all, the community doesn't want to be referred to as the beach flats.
Okay.
And the mindset is a serious separation from the river, when in fact you're only dealing with less than 12 blocks from Broadway, which is the clarity vision line of Santa Cruz, to the ocean. And the way the community felt is that the money, the officers, all this such that is being poured in has been on the other side of the river, and not too much attention has been given on this side of the river.
Mm-hmm. What do we call this side of the river?
This side of the river being the River Flats.
River Flats.
From Broadway to the river itself.
Uh-huh.
And people were, I mean, basically, it was reactionary politics to the nth degree. I mean, prostitution, crime, bring in more police. That's the solution. Everybody welcome it. Everybody applaud it. Blah, blah, blah. And I was lucky enough to be one of the 10 people to get to speak. And the clear message that I put out and I want to put out was, I do not want more police in my neighborhood. I do not welcome that. I do not applaud that. I do not want my child to get hit by a car of a police officer screaming by because he wants to play cops and do some drug bust, you know. I live on the corner and I see the cops when they do their raids or they do their bust on the corner of Barson and Canfield. And basically, it's five or six, you know, actually it's never that many. It's like two or three police officers spending 45 minutes trying to find a stash that they cannot find, you know, while detaining, you know, a handful of youth or one or two guys. And that's all it's ever been. You know, I've yet to see them really find anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest issue to me is Scott Kennedy.
Tell me about Scott Kennedy.
Scott Kennedy was there, and Scott Kennedy is totally in favor of putting up a police department at San Lorenzo Park. It's like a multi-million dollar. First of all, Santa Cruz is not that big to begin with. It definitely is a tourist town, but it's not that large. And to justify needing another multi-million dollar police facility.
So I should tell our listeners that there's a proposed police facility to be built either at San Lorenzo Park or the auto dealership across from the Loudoun Nelson Center. Those two locations have been mentioned for the new police facility.
Either location is terrible.
Tell us more.
Well, either location is definitely terrible. First of all, Kennedy gets up and he's just like, you know, talking about building this and hoping that the public will have enough sense to want to build this at San Lorenzo Park, and mockingly said, so what if there's a handful of lawn bowlers who will be upset? You know, and just really degrading the situation. And then he said that some people will be upset that a police station is going, you know, in place of a park. And of course I shouted out, yes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was just like, but I hope that you all are more intelligent than that, because the city can save over $800,000 that can go to us. Go to us for what? More police? It's just like, I cannot believe that Scott Kennedy, you know, takes applause in the fact that he was one of the founders, one of the starters with the nonviolence, what is it called?
Resource Center for Nonviolence,
and then turn around and ask for more police. It's like, how does that make sense? If Kennedy could see himself now, if 20 years earlier Kennedy could see himself now, he would be disgusted with himself, you know, and I don't even understand where this man is coming from.
Well, you know that Kennedy was, of course, one of the main boosters of the anti-homeless downtown ordinances last year, but made Gandhi's, well, Gandhi would have rolled over in his grave to see that.
Gandhi would have sat on the sidewalk, you know?
He sat on the sidewalk. If you sit on the sidewalk under the Kennedy law, which he voted for, you can go to jail.
Right, so
and people did.
And so, I mean, Kennedy's like totally made himself clear, and it's just like, when did he wake up and become one of them? You know, that's what I want to ask Kennedy. It's like, what's going on with his head? It's, you know? Don't come to me with nonviolence and this and that and then preach more police force, because it's me who will go to jail. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's my skin tone and the people of my skin tone that will go to jail. Kennedy will, you know, sit fine up on the west side wherever it is that he lives, you know? And, so I was really shocked at Scott Kennedy and his attitude, and I was happy to be able to say that I disagree with him openly on a mic and look at him straight in the eye, you know?
Well, he also has a phone number. You can give him a call and ask him, you know, when and why he changed, and to further justify his position. He may or may not be willing to talk to you. He no longer talks to me, unfortunately, but one can always hope for the future, or possibly it's a virtue in disguise. I don't know.
Well, at risk of being too insulting, because I don't wish to insult heavy set people, what have you, but it's like, the more that his butt gets bigger, you know, the more it's just like, Scott, stop feeding off the wealth of whatever you're getting and start, you know, coming down to reality and really doing something for people and not for just industry. And the whole thing is that the city values its tourism more than it values its community. And that's where the problem lies. If they want to go that route and they want to continue on with tourism, first of all, Santa Cruz isn't set up for it. The roadways aren't set up for it. Nothing is set up for it. This is a small community, and it's about 20 years behind as far as, you know, the influx of people have come in and modifications that need to be made for a city to grow that big and that fast. And they should concentrate on community over tourism, and they will, in the long run, do a lot better.
I agree.
So that's all that I really had to say. And definitely, if you guys get a chance, listen to Bob's show, because he did record it. I sat behind him as he recorded it all.
You mean he recorded the hearing on Wednesday night?
He did. And he also recorded all the comments that people had to say. And I don't think everyone was in agreement for more police, and it was clearly heard.
Actually, I was at the Tuesday night police show. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't.
Well, the evening before this show in the River Flats, where the city council's seven-person board sat and listened to a somewhat orchestrated community meeting. I understand this was somewhat orchestrated by Eric Larson and others. That's what I'd heard. The evening before, there was a meeting on community policing, and that is a sort of a nice way of saying, give us more money. The police department fundraising appeal, and Steve Belcher was presenting, as the police chief, he was presenting lots of charts for the entire city council in the Loudoun Nelson Center about how, you know, things are improving in beautiful Santa Cruz, and give us more money for this and that and the other. And interestingly enough, I was the only member of the public there. There was no one else there.
Wow.
It wasn't particularly interesting. You know, it was just another example of one finger talking to the next finger on the hand, and they're both sort of rubbing each other. And community policing, they actually had a name for it, a program called COPS. Community Organized for Problem Solving, COPS, that's what they called it.
Right.
Which I thought was just a beautiful example of doublespeak. I mean, certainly it's important if you're dealing with the police to know you're dealing with the police, you know, and the police are these guys with radios and guns. These are the police. they're the They're the force for fear and power in the city. And if you have any access to power and can use the police, then they're on your side. If you don't, then unless you're real lucky, or you know.
Exactly. One thing that I want to just kind of close with is the fact that this is obviously growing and spreading throughout the country. More cops. And the result is definite and deliberate genocide, and that the fact that by the year 2005, every black male under the age of 35 will somehow be tied to the penal colony, or penal colony,
might as
well be Franz Kafka, but the penal system.
Mm-hmm.
And think about that. Every single male, if this was happening to the white community, you gotta be kidding me, man. The white community would be outraged and it would be over with, you know? And so, think about that when you scream for more police and what have you, that you're really killing, a group of people, you know, and it's for real, and it's not some type of hysteria situation. And also, every black man that I know in Santa Cruz has gone to jail in Santa Cruz. Every black man that I know.
It's interesting you should say that, because I have a story from the Chronicle, where a letter writer makes that very point about the great numbers of people who've gone to jail. I'm going to try to find it. In fact, I had it right here. I'll read it on the air, and maybe we can get another caller to call in and to comment on what you've been saying.
All right.
Thank you, Lisa. Bye-bye.
And we're back at radio station here in Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. And here we are. The story that I was reading, considering reading to Lisa Moore Reed, I thought I had, and I'm missing, oh boy. We'll have to keep looking for that one. And you may have a